I'm in for a fun morning. Namrata likes to boss me around, but she's actually pretty great. There are only two summer associates this year, her and Juliet, so they're always slammed with work. But I guess that's how it goes when you're in law school. Apparently, 563 people applied for Namrata's and Juliet's positions. Meanwhile, my application process was Mom saying, "This will look good on your college apps." I follow Namrata into the conference room where Juliet's already thumbing through a stack of papers. She glances up. "The Schumacher files?" "You got it." Namrata stacks them on the table, sinking into a conference chair. I should mention that the chairs in here are squishy rolling chairs. It's probably the main perk of the job. I scoot back in my chair, kicking off from the table legs. "All these files are for one case?"
"Yep."
"Must be a big case."
"Not really," says Namrata.
She doesn't even look up. The girls get like that sometimes, hyper-focused and irritable. But secretly, they're pretty cool. I mean, they're not Ethan and Jesse, but they're pretty much my New York squad. Or they will be, once I win them over. And I will.
"Oh, Juliet,"
I roll back to the table, pulling my phone out. "I've got something for you."
"Should I be nervous?"
She's still lost in her document.
"Nope. Be excited."
I slide my phone toward her.
"Because this happened."
"What is this?"
"A screenshot."
"Specifically, a screenshot of a conversation that occurred on Twitter at 10:18 p.m. last night with Issa Rae, who happens to be Juliet's favorite actress, per Juliet's Instagram, which I secretly follow."
"You told Issa Rae it was my birthday?"
I beam.
"Yep."
"Why?"
"So she'd tweet you a birthday message."
"My birthday's in March."
"I know. I'm just saying, you lied to my queen."
"No, well, sort of." I rub my forehead. "Anyway, y'all want to hear about my latest screw-up?"
"I think we just did," Namrata says.
"No, this is different. It's boy-related." They both look up. Finally. The squad can't resist hearing about my love life. Not that I have a love life, but they like hearing about the random cute boys I see on the subway. It's pretty awesome to actually talk about this stuff out loud. Like it's no big deal. Like it's just a thing about me. "I met a boy at the post office," I say. "And guess what?"
"You made out behind a mailbox,"
says Namrata.
No.
"Inside a mailbox," Juliet suggests.
"No, no making out. But he has an ex-boyfriend."
"Oh, so he's gay."
"Right. Or bi or pan or something. And he's single, unless he rebounds really quickly. Do New York guys rebound quickly?"
Namrata cuts straight to the point.
"How'd you fuck it up?"
"I didn't get his number."
"Welp," Namrata says.
"Can you find him online?" asks Juliet.
"You see him good at that?"
"Well, I also didn't get his name."
"Oh, sweetie."
"Well, I did. Sort of. I'm like 50% sure his first name is Hudson."
"You're 50% sure."
Juliet's mouth quirks. I shake my head slowly. "I mean, I could show them the address label, but I'm not sure they need to know about me scrounging for trash on the floor of the post office. Even Jesse thinks that's creepy. And this is the girl who once told our entire math class she was related to Beyonce and showed up the next day with Photoshop pictures to prove it."
"So, all you have on this guy is his first name, which might not even be his first name."
I nod. "It's hopeless."
"Probably," says Namrata. "But, you could put a thing on Craigslist."
"A thing?"
"A misconnection. You know those posts where it's like, I saw you on the F train reading Fifty Shades of Grey and eating candy corn."
"Ew, candy corn?"
"Excuse me, candy corn is a fucking gift," says Namrata.
Seriously, Arthur, you should do it," says Juliet.
"Just write a post that describes the moment, like, hey, we met at the post office and made out inside a mailbox, so on and so forth."
"Okay, do people make out inside mailboxes here? This is not a thing we do in Georgia."
"Jules, we should write the post for him."
"Who even fits inside a mailbox?" I add.
"Yo," Namrata says.
Fire up your laptop, kid.
Okay, tiny pet peeve. When the girls call me kid. Like they're so mature and all-knowing and I'm some kind of half-formed fetus. Of course, I open my computer anyway. Pull up Craigslist. Don't people get murdered on Craigslist?
Nope, Namrata says. They get murdered for not getting on Craigslist fast enough and wasting my time.
So now I've got Namrata hovering over me and Juliet beside me and a million blue links arranged in narrow columns on my screen. Okay.
Namrata taps the screen. Right here, under community.
You seem to know your way around Craigslist, I say, and she smacks me.
I have to admit, I love this. The fact that they're interested. I'm always vaguely paranoid that Namrata and Juliet are exasperated by me. Like I'm some high school kid they're forced to babysit when they'd rather be doing important things like consolidating the Schumacher files. The thing is, they're the only squad I have in New York. I don't know how people make friends in the summer. There are 1.5 million people in Manhattan, but none of them make eye contact unless you already know them, and I don't know any of them, except the ones who work in this law office. Sometimes I miss Ethan and Jesse so much my chest hurts. Juliet's taken over my laptop.
Oh, God, some of these are really sweet, she says. Look.
She rotates the computer back toward me. The screen says this. Bleecker Street Starbucks, not named Ryan. M for M, Greenwich Village. You, button-down shirt with no tie. Me, polo with popped collar. They wrote Ryan on your drink, and you muttered, "Who the hell is Ryan?" Then you caught my eye and gave a sheepish smile. And it was very cute. Wish I'd had the guts to ask for your number.
Fuck. Ouch. That sucks.
I clicked to the next listing. Equinox, 85th Street. M for M, Upper East Side. Saw you on the treadmill. You look good. Hit me up. Juliet grimaces.
And they say romance is dead.
I love the total lack of specificity. Says Namrata. He's like, hey, you look good. Why don't I give you absolutely no frame of reference for who I am?
Well, Juliet says, at least he's giving it a shot.
Arthur, you want to have sex with this guy in a mailbox again, right?
This is not a thing. Mailbox sex is not a thing. I'm just saying,
look, he's blushing. Okay, I'm closing this now. I slide my laptop into the center of the table, burying my face in my arms. Let's do the Schumacher files.
And that, Namrata declares, is how we get Arthur to do some fucking work.
Chapter 4. Ben.
I think she died, Dylan says over FaceTime. Maybe I shouldn't have answered Dylan's call on my way to school. I'm on a Lord kick this week and could be listening to more of her music before class, but I got my best friend pants on because Dylan is thrown off by Samantha right now. Last night he texted her some YouTube videos of underappreciated Elliott Smith songs and still hasn't heard back. Dylan's love for Elliott Smith can go overboard sometimes. Like when he gave me shit for a solid week because I once spelled Elliott's name without the second T. I don't think she's dead. She probably has a life, I say.
Doing what?
I don't know. Slaying vampires?
Sun's up. No vampires out. Try again.
I'm sure everything is fine. You talked for 2 hours yesterday.
2 hours and 12 minutes, Dylan corrects. He refills his mug of coffee. He didn't get a lot of sleep.
I woke up to 2 middle-of-the-night missed FaceTime calls and 10,000 Samantha-related texts. I really don't get the coffee thing, and I especially don't get the coffee thing during the summer, and I 100% don't get the coffee thing when you're already having a hard time sleeping. This math doesn't add up. But girls have this effect on Dylan.
She has a last name, Dylan says.
Whoa.
Samantha O'Malley, Dylan says. He fills me in on every detail he learned about her yesterday. Being a barista makes her happier than it does her coworkers. Her favorite movies are Titanic and The Sandlot. She takes her little sister out for seafood every week. She's great at video games.
And I thought she liked me.
I've seen Dylan go through a dozen relationships since third grade. But he's never been this insufferable on day two of knowing a girl. Even his crush on Harriet took a month to really take hold, which is years in Dylan time. Dylan's hard eyes for Samantha remind me of how I was with Hudson, back when he used to race to find me after school. We know what happens next. I'm sure she likes you, dude. Liked. She's dead. I'll see you at the next heartbroken anonymous meeting. I turn the corner and walk to the school's entrance. The Yes I High in Midtown is not where Dylan and I go, but this year they're hosting a shitload of New York summer mourners from other public high schools. I'm about to reassure Dylan that Samantha will reach out when I see Hudson and Harriet sitting on the front steps of the school. Just like his Instagram picture yesterday, Hudson looks perfectly healthy. He sees me right before he can take another bite from his bacon, egg, and cheese roll, and he just turns to Harriet and busts out laughing. No shade to Harriet, because she's awesome, but hilarious she is not. Even she's looking at him like he's lost his shit. Oh, I say. D, I gotta go.
What's happening?
Dylan asks. I flip the phone around, and Dylan is also suddenly staring down Hudson and Harriet.
Oh.
Hi, guys. Harriet shakes her head. No thanks.
Alrighty then, Dylan says. Hudson, buddy, you have ketchup on your face.
I shake my head and hang up FaceTime while Hudson wipes his face with a napkin.
Hey, hi,
I say to Hudson and Harriet.
Hi,
Harriet smiles. But unlike yesterday, she doesn't give me a hug because Hudson's here and she can't go betraying him.
Really sucks, since we knew each other before Hudson transferred to our school at the beginning of junior year.
I really wish we could all be friends again. That Harriet and I could still talk about our favorite superhero shows. That Dylan and Hudson could still play chess. That Hudson and I could get our friendship back on track. Same for Dylan and Harriet. Maybe one day we can try being a squad again.
Hey, Hudson says, not looking at me. No brave Instagram face today.
He goes for another bite of his roll, but holds out, probably still mortified from having ketchup on his face. Hudson always has been a sloppy eater, but I never called him out on that. Walking to school and eating cheap sandwiches while talking about whatever was a highlight for me.
I know it shouldn't sting to see him having breakfast with Harriet, but it does. Like, it's really that simple for Hudson to write me out of his life.
You feeling better? I ask. I'm really trying to make the summer not suck.
Healthy and happy.
Hudson wraps the aluminum around his sandwich. And heading up. He goes up the steps and through the door.
This is going to be a fun day,
Harriet says.
I'll never ask him how he's doing again, I guess, I say.
He's going to need some time. Bruised ego.
He's the one who made out with another guy, I say.
He thought you guys had broken up, Harriet says.
He kissed him 2 days after our fight.
Harriet raises her hands.
It's more complicated for him, and I think you know that.
That's not fair. He broke my heart first, I say.
I don't get how Hudson gets all the pity points just because I'm the one who broke up with him.
I had my reasons. You know all of them.
I don't want to be in the middle any more than I am, Harriet says.
I'm sorry, Ben. She heads into the building. I take a deep breath.
I don't know what twisted world Harriet is living in where she's in the middle of this. She's clearly Team Hudson. None of this would be happening if Hudson and I had just stayed friends. I go up the steps, dreading this class. But I don't turn back. I'm not repeating junior year because my ex-boyfriend scared me out of summer school. Our teacher, Mr. Hayes, is outside the classroom flirting with the algebra teacher. Mr. Hayes is pretty young, like maybe mid-20s. He usually does missionary work in other countries during the summer, but in May he twisted his ankle during a Spartan race. So he's keeping busy teaching us chemistry. He's not exactly my type because he's a little too fit, the kind of guy you see on a package for underwear. But there's no denying how handsome he is. I take my seat at the back of the room, as far away from Hudson and Harriet as possible. I just open my notebook and keep to myself. I've always sucked at school. Hudson telling me I didn't have to study as hard for exams definitely didn't help. But I've always had trouble focusing in class. I spend way too much time daydreaming, for starters. Whenever there's a test, I study at home for 20 minutes and get back to my Sims and stories. Ma was so frustrated with me in my first semester that she confiscated the laptop until my grades improved. Which they sort of did, because I really needed to get back to my made-up worlds. But even when I do my best to pay attention in class, I feel so far behind. Like if you miss a lesson because you're out sick, or gazing out thinking about what it would feel like to be really loved back. The teachers don't stop class to reteach you. They keep it moving. I forget who fought in World War II. I can't name more than 10 presidents. I'm geographically lost. Trivial Pursuit is my nightmare. I want to know the real world better. Not just the ones I make up or the ones I play with on Sims. But right now I just feel lonely and unwanted in the real world. Mr. Hayes walks in with a crutch under one armpit and carrying a duffel bag in his other hand, like he's about to work out instead of talk about chemical properties for the next 2 hours. "Good morning, friends," he says. "Let's roll through attendance." Hudson raises his hand. "Hi, I'm Hudson Robinson. I missed yesterday." Mr. Hayes nods. "You sure did. Feeling better?" 100%. "Great, let's chat after class. I can walk you through what you missed," Mr. Hayes says. "Okay, Pete's here. Scarlet, wait," Hudson interrupts. "I'm not staying late. Coming to school during the summer is already over the top, thank you very much." Harriet gives Hudson her signature, "Dude, shut the hell up," face. "I'm not the one who failed you. It's my job to make sure you don't fail again. Just hang back for 30 minutes after class so you don't have to spend the next year watching your friends get ready for prom and graduation and college while you're making friends with juniors." Man, Mr. Hayes knows how to go for the throat without sounding like a total dick. "I'm not stupid. I know the material," Hudson says. I've never seen him talk to a teacher like this. "That's not why I'm here. I was just..." He doesn't look at me. "I only missed the first day. I got the basics covered." "Cool. Tell us how ionic bonds are formed and you can earn your freedom." Hudson doesn't say anything. "Alloys are a combination of... what?" Nothing. See? School pauses for no one. Not even confusing ex-boyfriends. Hudson shrugs and pulls out his phone. And holy shit, I hope he's going to Google these answers and not just text away. This stretch of awkward silence is made even more awkward by how hard Hudson is blushing. I haven't seen him this quiet since Kim Epstein tried to call him one of the girls as an insult because he's a little effeminate, and Harriet blasted Kim's business for trying to swing at her best friend. I'm killing the awkward silence. "Alloys are a combination of metals." We relearned that yesterday. Hudson snaps away from his phone and stares at me. I don't need anything from you, okay? Don't ask me how I'm doing. Don't help me out. He's so red in the face, it's a miracle he doesn't not so spontaneously combust. I want to prop up my notebook and hide. No one here knows our history except Harriet. They must think Hudson is a loose cannon, and I'm the summer school know-it-all. I do know one thing. This is going to be a long summer.
Chapter 5. Arthur. On the subway ride home, it hits me. I really, truly, irrevocably messed up. I met the most gorgeous boy with the most sun-kissed cheeks, and the weird part is, I honestly think he was into me. That smile. It wasn't a solidarity smile. It was a smile like a door opening. But that door is now slammed shut, locked, and deadbolted. I'll never see Hudson again. I'll never kiss him on his Emma Watson mouth. And isn't that just the story of my life? Relationship status. Forever alone. Wish I'd had the guts to ask for your number. Jesse's dead wrong about me being a badass. The truth is, I have zero guts and zero game. I've never had a boyfriend, never had sex, never kissed anyone, never come close. It hasn't bothered me until now. It just felt normal. After all, Ethan and Jesse are right there with me in that boat. But now, it feels like I'm auditioning for Broadway with no training and an empty resume. Unprepared and unqualified and totally, totally out of my depth. And all the way home, I feel too big for my skin. I hop off at 72nd Street and step out into a mess of people and taxis and strollers and noise. There are three blocks between the subway station and home. I spend the whole time reading missed connections on my phone. As soon as I open the door, "Art, is that you?" I set down my laptop bag on the dining room table, which is also both the living room table and the kitchen table. My great-uncle Milton's apartment has two bedrooms, and I guess it's considered big for New York. Even so, it makes me feel like a mummy in a sarcophagus. I definitely get why Uncle Milton's hanging out in Martha's Vineyard all summer. I follow Dad's voice, and he's sitting at my desk with a mug of coffee and his laptop. "Why are you in my room?" He shakes his head like he's baffled to find himself here. "I don't know. Change of scenery?" "You're scared of the horses." "I love horses. I just don't understand why your Uncle Milton needs 22 paintings of them," Dad says. "Their eyes follow you, right? I'm not imagining it." "You're not imagining it. I just want to, like, glue sunglasses on them or something." "Good call. Mom would be thrilled." For a moment, we just grin at each other. Sometimes with my dad, it's like we're two kids in the back of a classroom, which means there are times we must throw wads of paper at the back of my mother's head, metaphorically speaking. I peek at my dad's computer. "Is this a freelance thing?" "Nah, just tinkering." My dad's a web developer. In Georgia, he was the kind of web developer who made money until he got laid off the day before Christmas. So now, he's the kind who tinkers. And here's something you learn when you live in a sarcophagus. Sound travels through walls. Which means most nights, I get to hear my mom calling my dad out for half-assing his job search, which usually gets my dad muttering about how hard it is to job hunt in Georgia while living in New York, which always ends in my mom reminding him he's welcome to head back home anytime. Guess how totally not awkward that is. "Hey, what do you think about Craigslist misconnections?" I blurt. I don't know why I do this. I definitely wasn't planning on telling my parents the post office story, just like I wasn't planning on telling them about my sad crush on Cody Feynman from Hebrew school, or my even sadder crush on Jesse's very slightly younger brother, or the fact that I'm gay in the first place. But sometimes, things just slip out. "You mean like a personal ad?" "Well, yeah, but not like must love dogs and long walks on the beach. It's like..." I nod. "Okay, it's kind of like a lost cat ad, except the cat's actually a cute boy you met at the post office. but a human cute boy, not a literal cat.
Got it. Dad says, so you want to put up an ad to find the post office boy?
No, I don't know. I shake my head. Juliet and Namrata suggested it, yeah, but it's a total long shot. I don't even know if anyone reads those things.
Dad nods slowly. It's definitely a long shot.
Right. Stupid idea. Okay.
It's not a stupid idea. We should post one.
He's not going to see it.
He might. It's worth a try, right?
He opens a new search window. Okay, no. Craigslist is not a father-son bonding activity. But he's already typing, and I can tell from the set of his jaw, he's all in. Dad! The apartment door creaks open, and I hear the click of heels against hardwoods. A moment later, Mom's in my doorway. Dad doesn't even glance up from the computer screen.
You're home early, he says.
It's 6:30.
Suddenly, everyone's quiet. And it's not even the normal kind of silence. It's one of those charged, atomic silences. I dive into it head first.
We're making a thing on Craigslist to find that guy from the post office. Craigslist?
Mom narrows her eyes.
Arthur, absolutely not.
Why not? I mean, other than the fact that it's pointless and there's no way he'd ever see it.
Dad rubs his beard.
Why do you think he won't see it?
Because boys like that aren't on Craigslist. Boys like you aren't on Craigslist, says Mom. I'm not letting you get killed by a machete murderer.
I laugh shortly. Okay, I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen. Dick pics? Probably. Machete murderer?
Ooh, yeah, as your mom, I'm going to go ahead and veto the dick pics, too.
It's not like I'm asking for dick pics.
If you put an ad up on Craigslist, you're asking for dick pics.
Dad glances sidelong at Mom. Mara, don't you think you're being a little bit...
What, Michael? What am I being?
You don't think you're overreacting? Just a bit?
Because I don't want our 16-year-old son prowling around the underbelly of the internet? I'm almost 17!
Craigslist? Dad smiles. You think Craigslist is the underbelly of the internet?
Well, you would know.
Mom snaps. Dad looks confused. What's that supposed to mean?
Okay, please, stop. I cut in. Obviously, I'm not doing this. I'm not wasting my time searching for some random guy I talked to for 5 seconds, okay? Can we just chill?
I look from Mom to Dad and back to Mom. But it's like they don't even see me. They're too busy pointedly not looking at each other. So I leave, grab my laptop, exit stage left. My heart's beating so fast it's almost stuttering. I hate this. It's never been like this with them. Yeah, I've seen them get snippy with each other. We're not robots, but they could always joke their way out of it. It's just that these days, even the jokey moments feel like a temporary ceasefire. I sink onto the living room couch and shut my eyes. But I swear I'm being watched. By horses. Specifically, by the giant oil painting hanging above the table, which I can only assume is an early portrait of BoJack Horseman painted by Leonardo da Vinci himself. Mom's voice drifts in from my bedroom.
Home early. Excuse me? I rescheduled 2 conference calls to be...
Yeah, like I said, Dad's voice drops off. Early.
Oh, come off it. Are you kidding me? That's not...
You're reading too much into...
Okay, you know what you're not going to do, Michael? You're not going to spend the day playing computer games in your boxers and then come after me for...
I open my laptop, click into iTunes, Spring Awakening, original cast album. I jam my finger down on F12 until the volume's as high as it will go.
Mara, can you please...
And I let Jonathan Groff drown them out. Because that's what cute boys are for.
Chapter 6. Ben. I wish I felt Puerto Rican out in the world the way I do at home. Some friends in middle school told me I wasn't really Puerto Rican because I'm so white passing and only know a dozen basic Spanish phrases. Stuff like te amo and cómo estás. I told Pa that day, begging him to put post-it notes on different objects around the apartment to teach me Spanish so I wouldn't get bullied again. Bao was happy to do so, but he broke it down for me that being Puerto Rican didn't come down to my skin or knowing Spanish, but my blood and family. I really liked that. But that doesn't mean that I'm not constantly having to basically say, "Hi, I'm Ben. I'm Puerto Rican." Bao's complexion is the darkest in our family, though still really light, like a white person's tan. And how he looks is how everyone expects me to look. No one ever questions my dad being Puerto Rican. If only everyone can see me at home, completely killing it while I'm on sofrito duty, mellowing out to Lana Del Rey while mixing the cilantro, peppers, onions, and garlic, along with the fresh oregano my mom's coworker gave us. My dad prepares our plates with salad first, piling his rice and pigeon peas on top. He hooks me up with extra pegao because I've always loved crispy rice since I was a kid. Maybe because it's crunchy, like some of my favorite candy. My mom sets her coconut pudding in the oven, and we're pretty good to go. Ma taps my shoulder and says something I can't hear over the music. She pulls out one earbud. "What's going on with you?" Her dark hair rests over her shoulder, smelling like cucumber shampoo from her post-work shower. She's a bookkeeper at Blink Fitness, and even though she's in an office all day, the smell of sweat clings to her like a gym bro on a pull-up bar, so she's always quick to hit the showers when she gets home. "It's been a day," I say.
"Hudson?"
Pa asks. "Ding, ding." Pa shakes his head while cleaning the pots and pans before we eat, so the dishes won't seem as mountainous when our stomachs are filled. A trick Abuelo taught him. The soap foams over his hands.
"Diego, hurry up, I'm starving."
Ma hands me utensils.
"Benito, set the table, catch us up after prayer."
I set the forks and knives on our individual placemats. These impulse buys at the corner store when our money situation was a little better than it is now. Ma's is shaped like an owl, her favorite animal. Baz is a black and white linen stitch that he always scratches while waiting for us to finish our dinner. And mine has a T-Rex trying to drink from a water fountain, which hasn't won a smile out of me since I broke up with Hudson. We sit really close to one another. There's never been a time where my parents are both sitting at the heads of the table. Ma says it feels too regal, like we're eating a feast in some castle's massive dining room instead of a super cozy two-bedroom apartment. And Ba just doesn't like being that far away from Ma. We take one another's hands and Ma says grace. My parents are big on faith, and we like to say we have a healthy relationship with religion. We're not old-school Catholics who live by the Bible and conveniently ignore all the verses that contradict the hate coming out of their mouths. We're the kind of Catholics who think people shouldn't go to hell for being non-hetero, and that was before I even came out. My parents pray to God on the regular, and I jump in during dinner. This evening, Ma is thanking God for the food on the table, for my abuelita who fell getting out of the car, and my aunt who's taking care of her, for Pa's modest pay raise kicking in at Duane Reade, and for everyone's well-being.
"Okay," Ma claps her hands. "Hudson, what's going on with him?"
I like that my parents are so in my face, but know how to give me space, too. I was trying to help him out in class, and he flipped on me.
Pa's eyes narrow.
"I thought you said he wasn't the fighting type."
"He's definitely not," I say, and he cools down. 2 years ago, I got robbed outside a grocery store, and my parents locked me down with tight curfews, which felt like a punishment for being a victim, but I know it was all love with the way Ba trained me to throw up my fists and run. Still, that was a summer I lost, and it's not like they come around as quickly as weekends. He just shouted at me in front of everyone, and I didn't argue back.
"Good," Ma says.
"Also good that you can take him if you need to."
"Definitely." There was that one time where I picked up Hudson and kissed him against the wall because we saw a guy-girl couple doing it in a movie, and we wanted to see what it was like for a guy-guy couple. Then we flipped, and even though we're the same weight, he had a harder time carrying me. Okay, barbarians. Ma shakes her head because she's not about any talk of violence. She doesn't even like action movies, which Pa and I are openly fine with, since she will ask you 10,000 questions during a movie, even if everyone is seeing it for the first time. I hope it smooths over soon. Not holding my breath, I try to stretch dinner for as long as possible because being alone is really getting to me. Ma tells us about the new thriller podcast she's been listening to and how each episode ramps up the tension so much that she almost wishes the series was over already so she could breathe and not be held in suspense anymore. Ba tells us about how this afternoon, a father and son were buying condoms at the same time without realizing the other was there. How's your story going, Benito? Have I made a reappearance yet? Ma asks. The only people who know I'm writing this novel are Dylan, Hudson, Harriet, and my parents. This year I couldn't afford to buy Ma anything for Mother's Day, so I wrote her into the story as a sorceress who doesn't age and casts peace spells. I printed it out, but at the last second my insecurities kicked in, and I just told her what her character does instead of letting her read for herself. I've gotten so far with this story that I'm nervous any negative feedback might make me quit. Nope. Isabel the Serene needs to stay in her tower. Can't have any more peace spells in a war with wizards. Maybe they can reach a place of understanding by talking. Ma, no. I smile a little. The laptop has been acting up lately. It gets overheated after 20 minutes. Maybe if you pass summer school, we can get you a new one, Ma says. No, Pa says. His reward for passing summer school is not getting left behind. Better to have me home writing than outside getting robbed, right? Cheap shot, Pa says. But well played. Hector the Haggler taught you well. Hector the Haggler got even less page time than Ma's character. We can find another on Craigslist, Ma says. I think getting a laptop on Craigslist was the problem to begin with, but I can't complain. Frankie connected with his new girlfriend on Craigslist, Pa says. Which Frankie? Employee Frankie or mailman Frankie? I ask. Employee Frankie. Rodriguez. He was telling me about this page on Craigslist where you can find people you met or almost met. Missed you connections, I think. Pa looks at me and Ma like we're supposed to know what he's talking about. He shrugs. Well, Frankie first met Lola on the train, and they didn't trade numbers before he got off. His friend told him to check out Craigslist, and he found a listing from Lola. Been dating 2 weeks now. That's so wonderful, Ma says. Impressive, I say. It's like Craigslist is some agent of the universe, handling business. And maybe the universe is speaking through my dad right now to encourage me to do the same. To see if Arthur, my Lola, tried finding me too. I get up from the table. I have to check something, I say. What about dessert? Ma asks. I halt and almost double back, but keep it moving. Dessert will still be there. I have this, I must do this right now or explode feeling in my chest. I close my bedroom door and sit on my bed with the busted laptop that started this whole Craigslist conversation. There's this exciting hope of possibility filling me up. Like when Hudson and I started texting for the first time. Like when Arthur said hi and we flirted and talked about the universe. I go on Craigslist and find missed connections. Not missed you connections, Pa. Wow. And I look through their dude-for-dude listings in Manhattan. What starts out as hopeful scrolling quickly turns into defeat. And I sort of wish I could start a support group for all these people with their regrets and what-if fantasies. I close the laptop. I guess that's it on this Arthur business.
Chapter 7. Arthur. Wednesday, July 11th. Arthur, shoes, come on, we're going to be late. Mom checks her phone. Ugh, I'm getting a lift. I peer up at her from the couch. It's only 8. Well, since your dad finished off the coffee without telling me, she says loudly in the general direction of their bedroom, we need to stop at Starbucks before the Bray Eliopoulos call. You've taken your pill, right? Yeah, but I sit up slowly. Why don't I just take the subway? You'd need to leave now anyway for the subway. Not really, not until 8:20. Mom scoffs. Is that why you keep rolling into the office at 9:15? That was one time! She ruffles my hair. Come on, I already called the lift. But then the door to my parents' bedroom nudges open and out shuffles my dad, wearing plaid flannel pants and yesterday's t-shirt.
Morning,
he yawns, rubbing his beard. Hey, Art, you want to grab bagels? Yes. Michael, can you just... Not... Mom exhales. Not right now. They look at each other, and it's one of those lightning-fast, wordless parental debates, if you can even call it a debate. It's more like watching a bulldozer run over a worm. Dad pats my shoulder. Let's do bagels tomorrow. But I don't want to be stuck in a lift with pre-coffee Mom, I whisper. You'll survive. The lift pulls in front of our building, and I slide into the back seat after Mom. She smooths her skirt and sets her phone on her lap, screen down, hands clasped together. She's regained her chill now that we're moving, but she's watching me intently, and I think that's almost worse. No doubt she's gearing up for a chat. She clears her throat. So, tell me about the boy. What boy? Arthur, she nudges me, from the post office. I look at her sidelong. I already told you about him. Well, you just told me what happened at the post office, but I want the whole story. Okay, you didn't want me to look for him, so that is the whole story. Sweetie, I just don't want you on Craigslist. Did you read that article about... I know, machetes and dick pics. I shrug. I'm not doing Craigslist. I don't even care that much. I'm sorry, Arthur. I know you were hoping to find him. It's not a big deal, he's just a random guy. Well, I just think... Mom starts to say, but then her phone buzzes in her lap. She peeks at the screen and sighs. I have to get this, hold that thought. She twists her body toward the window. What's up? Yes. Okay, yes. On our way. 10 minutes and we're swinging through Starbucks. What? Oh. Oh no. She drums on her briefcase. Then she turns to me, eyes rolling slightly and mouths, work. Which means she's not hanging up the phone anytime soon. So I turn to stare out my own window, mentally cataloging the restaurants and storefronts. It's not even 9, but the sidewalks are jammed with commuters. They all look exhausted and generally underwhelmed. Underwhelmed. By New York. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like New Yorkers do New York wrong. Where are the people swinging from subway poles and dancing on fire escapes and kissing in Times Square? The post office flash mob proposal was a start, but when's the next big number? I pictured New York like West Side Story, plus In the Heights, plus Avenue Q, but really, it's just construction and traffic and iPhones and humidity. They might as well write musicals about Milton, Georgia. We'd open with a ballad, Sunday at the Mall, and then I left my heart at Target. If Ethan were here, he'd have the whole libretto written by the time we stepped out of the car. Oh, I don't think so, Mom sang into the phone. Unless Wingate filed a brief. Okay, we're a block away. She pauses. No, that's fine. I'll send Arthur. Be right up. Already, she's fishing a 20 from her purse. Tall, non-fat latte, she mouths. Hashtag intern life. I text Ethan while waiting in line at Starbucks. Concept, a musical set in the Atlanta suburbs called, wait for it, Hamilton. Mic emoji, down arrow emoji, boom. But Ethan doesn't text back. Thursday, July 12th. It's radio silence until the next morning, when Ethan texts a selfie to, surprise, surprise, the group chain. It's him and Jesse at Waffle House holding up a bottle of chocolate syrup. You're here in spirit, my dude, he writes. It just sucks. Any other summer, I'd be next to Jesse in that booth, eating hash browns and ranting about politics or Twitter or stage-to-screen adaptations. I'd give Ethan and Jesse the full, unabridged post office story, and we'd probably make a football-style Operation Hudson game plan in my notes app. As opposed to here, where the girls shut down every time I say the word Hudson. I swear, they're even worse than usual today. One of the paralegals drops off a package for Namrata, and she barely even looks at it. It's like she can't stop typing. For a moment, I just watch her. What's that? I ask finally. I don't know. Maybe you should open it. I will. Namrata's finger still on the keyboard for a moment while she reads something on her screen. Then she glances at a stack of documents, back up at her screen, and starts typing again. When, though? What? When do you think you'll open it? Let me guess. Namrata sighs so hard it ruffles the shoemaker documents. You're not going to let me work until I do. That's probably true. Then let's go. She rips the package open and peers inside of it for what feels like 10 minutes. But when she finally turns back toward me, she's smiling. Why the fuck did you buy me 5 pounds of candy corn? It's actually 4 pounds and 14 ounces of candy corn. In July, adds Juliet. Arthur, you are something else, says Namrata. Translation, I nailed it. Juliet ruffles my hair. Wanna grab lunch with us? Translation, I super nailed it. I'm so happy I could sing. If the girls and I are lunch friends now, we're probably on track for tasteful matching BFF tattoos by next week. And then they'll introduce me to cute law school boys, cuter than Hudson, and I'll never go home. I'll just stay here in New York with my awesome new squad, my new best friends. I mean, who even needs Waffle House? I'll just be here grabbing business lunch in New York fucking city, the culinary center of the universe. Ethan and Jesse can spend the rest of their lives eating at chain restaurants. From now on, I'll only eat at farm-fresh artisan food trucks and iconic celebrity delis. I've always wanted to try Tavern on the Green, I say. Arthur, we have 30 minutes. Sardi's? How about Panera? I gasp. I love Panera. Yeah, I figured, says Namrata, throwing back a fistful of candy corn. 5 minutes later, we hit the streets, and I can't get over how different the girls are outside the office. They're so open. Up until today, most of my Namrata and Juliet intel came from one of three sources. Eavesdropping, Instagram, and my mom. Now, I know Juliet's a dancer, and Namrata's a vegetarian, and they hated each other their whole first year of law school, but now they're best friends, and they go on runs together and eat cupcakes, and neither of them has skipped a single reading for any class ever. All this before we're even in line at Panera. I'm beyond disgusted, Namrata's telling Juliet. I was like, you know what? That's fine. Don't call them out, but guess what? I'm done spending the night there. Sorry, David, but dinosaur porn crosses a line for me. Juliet moans. Ew. Wait, who's David? And why is he into dinosaur porn? Okay, real talk. I hate when people drop a random name like I'm supposed to magically know it. No, it's David's roommates, Juliet explains. And they're not only into dinosaur porn, adds Namrata, but they're actually creating their own... I'm not even kidding. Dinosaur porn web comic, which, okay, you do you, but
Then they leave their sketches in the fucking living room, and I'm like, David, can I please not have to look at this picture of a T-Rex getting himself off? But T-Rex arms? Juliet looks baffled. How? Seriously, who's David? I ask. Namrata looks amused. My boyfriend. You have a boyfriend? They've been dating for 6 years, Juliet says. What? No way. I turn to Juliet. Do you have a boyfriend? I have a girlfriend, Juliet says. You're a lesbian? Next, says the guy behind the counter. Juliet steps up and orders a soup. Then she turns back to me and says, well, I'm biromantic, Ace, which means... I know, but you never mentioned it. Why don't you guys ever tell me anything? We tell you to get back to work, says Juliet. We tell you that a lot. But you never tell me about your love lives. I've told you every single thing about Hudson, and I didn't even know you had a girlfriend. And I definitely didn't know Namrata had a boyfriend named David, who draws dinosaur porn. No, David's roommates draw dinosaur porn, Namrata interjects, drifting back from the counter. That is a critical piece of information, Arthur. You're up. Go order your PB&J Happy Meal. Psh, I'm getting grilled cheese. Grown up grilled cheese. Namrata pats my head. Very sophisticated. Hudson? Someone says over a microphone, and I freeze. Namrata and Juliet freeze. The whole world freezes. Hudson, your order's ready. Arthur. Juliet presses a hand to her mouth. It's not him. How do you know? It can't be him. That would be too weird. Like, what are the odds? I shake my head. It's some other Hudson. We're near the post office, says Juliet. He probably works around here or lives here or something. It's not really that common of a name. Yeah, we're going up there, Namrata says. No way, that's shady. No, it's not. She gives me a not-so-gentle yank toward the pickup counter. Standing with his back to us is a boy in jeans and a fitted polo shirt. White, taller than me, hair totally covered by a backward baseball cap. Is that him? I don't know. Yo, Hudson, Namrata says loudly. My heart stops, and the boy turns around, looking slightly apprehensive. Do I know you? He asks Namrata. It's not him. It's not Hudson. Well, apparently it is Hudson. Or at least he answers to Hudson. But he's not my Hudson. If my Hudson's even a Hudson in the first place. My head's kind of swirling. This Hudson isn't terrible looking. He's got really nice cheekbones and incredible eyebrows. He's staring at us now, looking bewildered, and I'm absolutely pissing my pants mortified. Hudson? From band camp? Namrata asks smoothly. I didn't go to band camp. Oh, well, must be someone else. Someone else named Hudson? He asks. Namrata doesn't even bat an eye. Yep, Hudson Panini. Hudson Panini. Did Namrata seriously just pull a fictional camp friend out of her ass and name him Hudson Panini? Oh, wow. Way more epic than Hudson Robinson. I'm afraid so. Namrata grabs my hand. But enjoy your bread bowl, Hudson Robinson. I ordered a panini, Hudson says faintly. But by then, we're halfway back to the table. Juliet's on us immediately. How did it go? I'm going to murder Namrata, I inform her. Namrata snorts. Excuse me? Hudson Panini? I saw Panini. Genius, says Juliet. I sink back into my chair. That was so humiliating. Whatever. You're being a wimpy little butt, says Namrata. You weren't even going to talk to him. That wasn't even him. It was the wrong guy. Well, obviously, he didn't recognize you at all. Juliet leans back in her chair. So it was a totally different Hudson? Or it's the ex-boyfriend, Namrata says casually. In which case, you're welcome. I just got you his last name. Wait, I murmur, but the rest of my words evaporate. Because maybe Namrata's wrong, but maybe she's not wrong. Maybe Hudson Robinson, backward cap-wearing eyebrow god Hudson Robinson, is Box Boy's ex. I bet he's been too depressed to wash his hair since the breakup, which is why he's wearing the hat. Holy shit. Hudson Robinson. I'm not a stalker or anything. It's not like I'm going to show up on his doorstep, but everyone's on the internet somewhere, right? I mean, maybe I was actually fated to meet the boy from the post office. Maybe I'm fated to find him again. And maybe, just maybe, I'm supposed to find him by following the boy who brought him to the post office in the first place. Hudson Robinson. I type, and then I click enter.
Chapter 8. Ben. Class was rough, and the last thing I really want to be doing is meeting Dylan's future temporary girlfriend. But I rushed downtown anyway, as if getting far enough away from school can help me forget about how much it hurts to be excluded from all the laughs Hudson and Harriet share at the beginning and end of class. I get off the train, and Dylan is outside a pharmacy, holding a Dreamin' Bean thermos and a bouquet of flowers. "You have murderer face going on right now," Dylan says. "Guilty murderer face. Maybe we can turn that frown upside down before you meet Samantha. Happy best friend face, if you need any suggestions." Dylan winks. I will play along with happy best friend face because it's Dylan. But it really is getting exhausting, getting to know all of his girlfriends, bonding with them, and losing their friendship pretty quickly after Dylan cuts ties with them. "You got it. What's going on with the roses?" I ask. "Samantha mentioned roses are her favorite flower while we were watching Titanic," Dylan says, beaming, like it's a superhuman trait to remember something that was said less than 24 hours ago. "You guys hung out?" "Over FaceTime last night." "You were on FaceTime the whole time? Isn't that movie over 3 hours long?" Dylan nods. "It took us over 4 hours to get through it. We kept pausing to talk." "That's impressive," I say. I mean it, especially considering how much sleep he lost the night before because Samantha hadn't texted him back about Elliot Smith. It turns out she just hadn't had a chance to listen to the songs yet, and she loved them all. "Did you like it?" "I thought the ship was going to sink a lot sooner, if you catch my drift." "You were bored until the ship started sinking?" "I was bored until the ship started sinking, yes." Dylan has some serious pep in his step as we rush to the coffee shop. He's dodging people left and right, and I can barely hear him go on about how there was room for Jack and Rose on that floating door, or how they could have at least taken turns. Dylan stops at the corner. "Okay, how do I look?" He's got bags under his eyes, and he's wearing a cool coffee t-shirt, which feels super extra, but otherwise good. Except, might want to toss the Dreamin' Bean cup. Dylan tosses a thermos at me like it's a grenade, and we pass it back and forth before I finally throw it in my backpack. "You're ridiculous," I say as we walk inside Cool Coffee. The coffee shop smells like pretentious writers who would hate the stuff I write. Samantha's behind the counter in all her glory. She stops taking someone's order and waves. Her dark curls are flattened by a khaki cap, and her blue-green eyes are beaming at Dylan. And boom, bright white teeth when she smiles over a customer's shoulder. I'm certain that I'm 100% gay, because if I was even 1% bisexual, I would be crushing hard on Samantha for looks and high energy alone. Dylan watches Samantha as if she were glowing, and I wonder when I went dim for Hudson, if I ever really glowed for him at all. Oh, shit. One free table left. "I'm grabbing that table," I say. Dylan wrenches me back.
You have to order. Also, I'm nervous I'll say something stupid.
You'll be fine.
I almost walked in here with coffee from the enemy.
I stay put. I have my happy best friend face on, even when some hopeful